So in order to decide what types of disorders we have, we're using morphology. And this is to help us recognize the immature cells, whether they're myeloid, myeloblasts, erythroblasts, monoblasts, or megakaryoblasts, which I don't have listed here. Now, what I've done is that I've gone back to the old lectures. I told you that I was going to utilize my changes, but we've decided instead of worrying about trying to change the test and change these things, we'll just go with the old stuff. So that should be what you guys have, okay? Assess for maturation and the number of lineages involved. So, depending on how mature the leukemia is and how many lineages are involved. So, we do have myelomonocytic leukemia, which has two lineages in it. So, that's important for whoever's taking care of the patient to know so that they can respond to those types of variations in leukemias. So
Will that tell you which colony forming unit is having an issue if you know how many lineages are involved? Or
not necessarily. Okay. It could still be the stem cell of GEMM and still only end up with myeloid mono. Okay, so that's not necessarily, but if you recall, we talked about cell cycle, and as these cells that are malignant go through cell cycle, you've got the drugs that can hit them in the mitotic series and in the synthesis series. So the reason that it is important to be able to distinguish these is a little academic between the myeloblasts and monoblasts. The erythroblasts are a little harder to handle. The megakaryoblasts are really hard to handle. But if you give a drug for the ones that come from the GEMM and you actually have a lymphoid leukemia, then you're not doing the patient any good, okay, because there are two different regimes for lymphoid and myeloid, okay? All right, so cytochemistry. This is something that helps us know, and let me tell you right now, when we talk about stains for the acute leukemias, if you learn them, you will pass the acute leukemias. If you learn those stains, you will pass because we use those stains constantly to help you know which leukemia it is. So if you will make the effort, and we'll go over and over and over it with you and show it to you over and over again to see how these will help you separate out the leukemias, okay? So please don't close your eyes to the concept of learning these stains. Then immunophenotyping. There are some that we will expect you to know. Will they be useful to you on the test? There's a couple of places that will be, okay? But I'll try to make sure that you understand. Now, when you guys have gone through some of your other classes, have you studied the CDs, the cluster of differentiations, to any degree? Okay, I'll let you know which ones I want you to know then. Then skip that. Okay, genotypic properties. The different types of the chromosomes that are involved in the different types of leukemias, there's only a few for you to know, but I'll make sure that you know which ones those are. And there's probably only about four I want you to memorize, okay? But they're specific and significant because, like in a programmed acidic leukemia, we have a 15-17 translocation. I told you 100% of them have that. The 17th chromosome has the gene on it for retinoic acid. So this is the first and hallmark leukemia that we actually treat with vitamin A or retinoic acid, along with the chemotherapy. And they say that they have 40% cures because of this. So you see how critical it is to understand the genetic makeup of what's going on. Molecular assays. I just mentioned... So we have a 15-17 translocation, and so this is an AML gene, and this is a retinoic acid receptor alpha gene, and we give the retinoic acid, but you see these two genes here make a fusion gene. And we can use PCR to make a probe for this gene. So we know clear down, normally, if we're looking at it morphologically, it has to be 10 to the ninth amount of cells in there before we're able, no, excuse me, 10 to the 12th amount of cells in there before morphologically we see they've got an acute leukemia. That's how many cells have to be there. If we get them in remission and cannot see them anymore, we get 10 to the 9th. Okay? If we can use PCR and the probe for this, we can go clear down to 100,000. So one cell out of every 100,000 we can pick up as a leukemic cell. So you see how much better to be able to use the fusion genes when we can describe them, if that makes any sense to you. So we're just trying to make it better in trying to find when the person's coming out of their coming out of their remission, so that we can treat them again faster. Okay? Okay, the incidence, it's really 3.5 per 100,000 now, okay? And if you have problems with how many red cells you're making in the bone marrow, you're going to have anemia. If you have problems making normal SEGs and normal the granulocytic series or monocytic series, you're going to have infections. And if you have trouble with making platelets, you're going to have trouble bleeding. So when people come in with problems associated with leukemia or the myelodysplastics, these are the three symptoms that you're going to see, because these are the three cell lines that are not normal anymore. So what causes it? What can cause a leukemia? Anything that causes marrow damage or messes up the chromosomes, immunological defects. So high-dose radiation, you've already heard of chloramphenicol, what it can do to the bone marrow. Benzene and chloramphenicol are chronic problems as far as having a higher incidence in acute leukemia. Aplastic anemia will go into acute leukemia more readily. Proximal nocturnal hemoglobinuria. We will talk about both of these. This will be next week, but this will be today. So both of those have a higher incidence in going into acute leukemia. If you have genetic factors such as, they call it familial leukemia, meaning they're actually born with leukemia. And Christine had an experience of a four-month-old baby that, and this won't be so impressive to you, but to Shauna it should be, had a 947,000 white count. You ever heard of such a white count? Just solid, uh-huh. And if you think your normal white count's 5,000 to 10,000, and you've got a 900 and something thousand white count, this kid was just incredible. Anyway, died before he got to Utah. Twins have, if one twin gets acute leukemia, the other twin has a much higher chance of getting acute leukemia. And she talked about Fanconi's and Bloom's. These are already chromosome abnormalities, and they have a higher incidence, about 20% higher going into acute leukemia. And there are viruses that actually cause acute leukemia. Okay, so what are the reasons for not having the normal hematopoiesis going on? We have replacement by the leukemic stem cell. So it's the stem cell, the leukemic stem cell, that keeps producing. And the more it produces, this leukemic stem cell can inhibit normal hematopoiesis. I kind of mentioned that to you the other day. I kind of skip over this one, and then you have an altered microenvironment that also screws up the normal hematopoiesis. So when this person walks into your laboratory or walks into the doctor's office, these are the things they're complaining about. Weakness, pallor, they're anemic, okay. They're bleeding, they have infections. The bone or skeletal pain is because there's so much growth in the bone marrow, and there are nerves inside of the bone, and so they feel this pain. Abdominal fullness, I mentioned how infiltrative monocytic component is, and so it will make a huge spleen and a huge liver. CNS involvement, especially in lymphoid leukemias, because the lymphoblasts are much smaller and they can cross the blood-brain barrier, okay? Not so much in the myeloid. We will talk about plenty of these things. We'll be more specific on those. Metabolic problems. This is something that we find constantly, especially after you put them through chemotherapy, is that these nucleic acid buildups are there because you're destroying so many cells. And you have this ineffective hematopoiesis, so such a buildup of nucleic acids. And to try and get them passed out of the body without terrible problems is really hard, and to keep the electrolytes in balance. And then, of course, the procoagulant activity of DIC can be triggered, but specifically in one more than the others, and we'll talk about that. Okay, we went over those real quick. Classifications. We have chronic and acute leukemia. This subacute is not utilized much anymore. So these are representing the history. Acute, well, if they're not treated, will die within 3 months. Chronic, if not treated, will die within 1 year. Traditionally, we determine acute leukemia on the type of cell that's involved, okay? So acute myelocytic leukemia, acute promyelocytic, acute myelomonocytic, acute monocytic, acute erythrocytic leukemia, and megakaryocytic. So dependent on the cell type involved. For the chronic leukemias, we have chronic myelogenous leukemia, we have chronic lymphocytic leukemia, we've got plasma cell disorders such as multiple myeloma. But we also have an acute leukemia for the lymphocytic group, and this is usually a childhood leukemia. Okay, so we have the French, American, British who got together and wanted to be able to worldwide talk about the same type of leukemia. So they came up with a classification for that, and they used morphology and cytochemistry. And they divided it into a lymphocytic and non-lymphocytic. And the non-lymphocytic were all those that I just read to you, where the myeloblast, promyelocyte, and so on. These are also terms that aren't utilized much anymore. If, in fact, the tumor or the abnormal cell type starts being just inside of an organ or something, so if it's just an accumulation of myeloblasts in an area of the body, they call it a chloroma. If it's lymphoblasts, they call it a lymphoma. Lymphocytes is also a lymphoma. If there's plasma cells, they call it a myeloma. So if you have these malignant cells forming in areas of the body other than the peripheral blood and bone marrow, this is what they call them. Okay, what makes a person die from acute leukemia? It's associated with the cytopenia. Cyto meaning cell, penias meaning decreased. So with red cell being depressed or platelets being depressed or white cells being depressed, these are usually the problem areas. You can die from the metabolic defects if they can't keep the electrolytes in balance or something like that, or if the leukemic cells are infiltrating the organs and making them so they cannot function anymore, then you will die from that. Okay, any questions about that stuff? Yes. Chronic are more mature cells, acute are more immature cells. Okay, and we will go over that. Okay, myelodysplastic syndromes, which you guys discussed this morning. Okay, by the time we get done with this 2 weeks, you guys are going to know a lot of different diseases. And today we're going to do 5 or 6 together. But by the end of the day, you will know these diseases, okay? Okay, but what you do have to understand is the dysplasias, the dysabnormal plasias production. So we're going to go over the dysplasias. We have dyserythropoiesis, which are the red cells, dysmegakaryopoiesis, which are the platelet grouping, and dysgranulopoiesis, which is the granulocytic line, okay? And there are lots of variations between these. So I need to show those to you, okay? in that, let's do dyserythropoiesis. Christine, do you want to? Okay, that's the first one. Okay. These are normal rubrosites. These are megaloblastic rubrosites. I thought we had, let me just quickly go over these before we start there. Dual red cell population. We have normochromic or hypochromic. We can have normocytic, macrocytic, or microcytic. These things cause an increased RDW. You can see a few nucleated reds, and you can see some macrovallocytes in the peripheral blood. Those are all examples of dyserythropoiesis, okay? Those are hints that that's what's going on. Also, you can have polychromatophilia, or you can have decreased retics, so either one can be there. Basophilic stippling, Pappenheimer bodies. We talked to you about the Pappenheimer bodies this morning. Poik and aniso. These are two terms that are just general terms. You really don't get any information from those two terms. One's saying there's a variation in size, one's saying there's a variation in shape. Okay, so on the bone marrow, you can have a hypoplastic, meaning there's too few cells, normoplastic or a hyperplastic bone marrow. And I can show you pictures of those at some point in time. The changes that are critical and significant. This is megaloblastic. This is normocytic, okay? These are rubrosites. These are rubrosites, but these are megaloblastic rubrosites, okay? So, the nuclear pattern is too immature.
It does that itself, I got to
She wants to get her say in, you see. See how fine the chromatin pattern is there compared to what it should normally be at that stage? Okay, that's megaloblastic. Megaloblastoid is when it's too clumped. See how fine that is and how clumped that is? So this is megaloblastoid. It's multinucleated too, as you can see. But see how heavy the chromatin pattern is? So megaloblastoid is too heavy. Megaloblastic is too smooth. Okay? Those are ones that you're going to see. That will be evident to you. Go ahead. Nuclear budding. You see how this little budding is coming off here? So nuclear budding. Next, karyorrhexis. See, that nucleus is just basically exploded. You see it better there?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll leave that off for just a second, okay? So this is a red cell precursor. This nucleus is just coming apart. Next. This one is multinuclearity. This is a gigantoblast. It's a huge multinuclear red cell precursor. Next. This is internuclear bridging. You see that little bridge right there that's between those two. Go ahead. And this is the vacuolation that you'll see sometimes in the erythroblast. This is an erythroblast. This is a myeloblast. And see the vacuolation. There's vacuolation in the myeloblast, too. If you decide to become an alcoholic, this is what happens to your bone marrow. It becomes very vacuolated.
So is it never normal to see vacuoles in the bone marrow?
Not in the precursor cells. No, it's not. Go back one. This is arsenic poisoning here, okay? That's what happens when somebody manages to get it into you. Go ahead. Okay, ring sideroblast. We talked about this a little bit this morning, I think. So you can see that this is more than 5 granules, around more than 1/3. But this right here would qualify for ring sideroblast, okay? Okay, PAS stain, periodic acid shift stain. These spotlights of positivity or big chunks of positivity are very abnormal in a red cell precursor. So it happens in dysplasia. Abnormal mitotic figures, see how it's thrown off the chromatids here? So the rapid maturation that's going on has thrown off these chromatids, and these are going to round up and be all jolly bodies, okay? Resynthesis of hemoglobin A F. This is Kleihauer-Becky stain, so you see that it's forming the hemoglobin F again. This is defective hemoglobinization. This is a big red cell precursor. It's got an irregular nuclear outline here, but you'll notice it has areas that it's not hemoglobinized like it is in other areas. That's abnormal. Okay, irregular nuclear outlines. This should be nice and round. Okay, so it's irregular. That's very abnormal for a red cell precursor. Irregular clefts in the cytoplasm. See these little bulbs coming off out here. See, you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 rhuboblasts. If you recall yesterday when you're doing your bone marrows, you know that you don't see 5 rhuboblasts in one picture, right? So you know you've got a pretty strong erythroid hyperplasia there. Okay. So in the peripheral blood for dysmegakaryopoiesis, you can have a decreased platelet count. You can actually sometimes have an increased platelet count. The micromegakaryocytes, this is a micromegakaryocyte right here. This is a micromegakaryocyte here. You can have a micromegakaryoblast. Actually, this is probably more a blast here. You see a nucleoli there. Okay, are you supposed to tell the difference? No. Okay. Large atypical platelets. See this large atypical platelet here? And you see how degranulated the platelet is? It's just a blue platelet. Functional abnormalities that you will see, they don't function right. They don't stop you from bleeding. You'll have vacuolated platelets. You can have degranulated. You can have huge granules in your platelets, but they do not function normally. So in the bone marrow, you can have micro and macro megakaryocytes. You can have mononuclear megakaryocytes. This is a huge platelet here, as you can see. Let's go ahead and see if we've got more examples. Okay, here's your mononuclear megakaryocyte. You see it only has one lobe in it. That's abnormal. The megakaryocyte, when it matures, it divides once, so there's two lobes, then there's four lobes, then there's eight lobes, and then there are 32 lobes. But the cell doesn't divide, just the nucleus divides. And it stays connected, those lobes, okay? So this is very abnormal. Go ahead. Let's see. Abnormal granulation. You see this granulation's not very uniform. It's a monolobed. This is very abnormal, too. This is two nucleuses here. You can see how huge these cells are in comparison to the other cells. So you know that they're megakaryocytic line. Go ahead. Vacuolated nuclei. This was a little two-year-old boy. And he only lived 3 days from the time that he came in to the hospital that he was at. I managed to get the slide from that hospital. And all of his megakaryocytes were vacuolated like this. So vacuolated cytoplasm, vacuolated nuclei, very, very abnormal characteristics. But goes to show how tragic that particular leukemia is. Abnormal nuclear changes. You can see these two nuclear ones are very abnormal. You can see it's bilobed. Go ahead. And first bilobed abnormal. These should be hooked together, these lobes here. And you can see that they're separated. That's very abnormal. Go ahead. This is, okay. On the outside, you see that there's just a rim of dark blue. Well, the granulation should all be on the outside and the bluer on the inside. So it's just reversed as to what it should be in making normal platelets. Go ahead. This is a giant megakaryocyte. You can see how big it is compared to the cells next to a huge megakaryocyte, multi-lobed. And this is one, another micromegakaryocyte. You can see the degranulated seg there. And then you've got the budding off there helps you know that you've got a megakaryocytic disorder type thing. And this is just looks like a blob, but this is a micromegakaryocyte, okay? Okay. Go ahead, let's see. Okay, for this granulopoiesis, this is the one that you're going to be able to pick up on in the peripheral smear. And you will be able to do this, okay? You can have neutropenia. You can have the disorders that we're going to talk about usually have decreased white counts, okay? They can have neutropenia, monocytosis. They have this pseudo-Pelger-Hewitt look where they're bilobed. Pseudo-Chediak-Agashi. Do you remember what Chediak-Agashi looked like? Big granules, right. So you can have these huge fusion of granules. You can have the hypogranular neutrophils or degranulated looking ones or immature neutrophils out in the peripheral blood. Now this is a Coulter instrument, and we show this because this is the instrument we have. And I should have a normal up here so you could see it. But this line here should basically be over here. But because the population, these should be monocytes, these should be granulocytes, okay? But because they're so degranulated, they've moved over into the monocyte area. That is a clue for us to know that something is really wrong with this person. Excuse me. So as you get acquainted with what other types of instrumentation you have, if they use light scatter, and I think almost all instruments do, there should be a mechanism for you to pick up on the fact that you have degranulated SEGs. So don't ever let anybody tell you that what the instrument's doing is just magical and you don't have to worry about anything. And you really do. The more you look at an instrument, the more information you will get from it, okay? Okay, so this is the monocytosis I'm trying to show you. You see the monocytic? They don't look very normal, especially this and this one. But these are, so you've got too many monocytes, so monocytosis, go ahead. This is the Chediak-Agashi look, the pseudo-Pelger-Hewitt. Pelger-Hewitt, sorry. And this is the pseudo-Chediak-Agashi. Okay. And then this is the degranulated SEG. See, you just virtually don't see. This is hockey puck right there. And this is just degranulated SEGs. Okay. And this is showing the immaturity. Here's a myeloblast, and here's a degranulated SEG. And if you put a stain on that degranulated SEG, this should shine up really good with myeloperoxidase, but it's not. So the granules are basically gone, okay? And this is another stain that's negative. And this circular, they call it a rodent cell, kind of a toilet seat nucleus, irregular staining in the cytoplasm, but rodents look like this. Their SEGs look like this normally, okay? So in a human, that's very abnormal. And the other thing, I should keep going here. So we got the ring nuclei, hypersegmentation, kind of a big close picture, nucleated red. Hour rod, see that rod right there? This is a myeloblast. You don't get an hour rod in a lymphoblast. You typically don't get them in a monoblast. If you get to have an hour rod, think myeloblast, okay? You see it right here and right here. Those are your hour rods. They're made up of primary granules that have coalesced together. Okay, this is a type 1 blast. Okay, you guys aren't going to like this one. Okay. Type 1, we see absolutely no granules in here. See how sharp the edge of the nucleus is? Now, if you see here, it's not nearly so sharp. That's because there's a few granules in there. Okay? So if you were to put a stain on this, here and here, you'd probably see some positive reaction. But right here, this makes this a type 1 blast.
absolutely no granules, okay? Christine? This is a type 2 blast. You see these few granules right here? Less than 20 granules, but granules present is a type 2 blast. And we don't have type 2 blast. Okay. So if there were more than 20 granules, but it was still a blast-looking nucleus, we'd call it a type 3 blast. So I'll show you a picture of one of those. Okay? So type 1, type 2. Go ahead.
Oh, the wrong way, sorry. You need that auto back on.
Okay, the other thing that you'll see, what is this cell? Plasma cell, good. Okay, do you see these? It looks like they have it's called a myelocytic dawn. Anyway, these are all myocytes, and they've got a hot spot here of their secondary granules starting to form.
And if you noticed upstairs, some of you had quite a few myelocytes when you were counting your disc. That's called a myelocytic bulge, and that's typical of myelodysplastic syndromes. Okay, again, trying to show the degranulation, but look what an irregular is. Does that look red cell or white cell to you? Red. See that chromatin pattern? That's definitely a red cell pattern. See, it's not going to divide evenly, is it? That's very abnormal. Okay, so a lot of dysplasia there. Let's see, what's this? Type 1, type 2, type 3 blast. Myelocytic bulge. Okay, what I'm trying to show you here is the how many immature cells there are. If you recall, when you were doing your count yesterday, you saw a lot of bands and a lot of sags and a lot of things like that, but not that very many of these big round cells, see? So you've got a fair amount of myeloblasts here, aruboblasts here. So it's too young. Okay, it's just too young. Okay. So we got the increased blast. I went over that. Now, this abnormal localization of immature precursors, I'm just going to bring a book around and show each of you what that looks like, okay? So, myelodysplastic syndromes. This is a specific condition that's only been really described in the last 20 to 30 years, okay? So this is something that we have seen forever but didn't have a title for it. What is wrong in myelodysplastic syndromes is apoptosis is too active. Okay? So too much apoptosis. So you end up with cytopenias. So you can get a hyperplastic marrow because the marrow thinks the body needs more cells. But because of apoptosis being overactive, they're destroyed in the marrow, and therefore what you see in the peripheral blood are cytopenias, okay? So this is a malignant clone of cells. They're due to altered pluripotential stem cells, so we're talking about the GEMM stem cell. And it's evidenced by these cytopenias, and you have these morphologic variations due to the apoptosis. You get to see the apoptosis and cellular dysfunction because you don't have the granules there to help you function normally. These people are typically over 50 years old. You guys in this room, except for a couple, shouldn't get myelodysplastic syndromes. They present with cytopenia, so you usually have a white count a little lower than less than 4,000, okay? Anemia is the most frequent finding. The bone marrow has dysplasia in it of at least one cell line. So of all these things we showed you over here, at least one of those dysplasias has to be present in at least 10% of the cells, okay? So if you have an abnormality in the red cell series, you're thinking of refractory anemia or refractory anemia excess blasts. 30% of these people will go on to have acute leukemia. We used to use the term pre-leukemia. How many of you would like to go to the doctor and have the term pre-leukemia used on you? So they got rid of that. It is an entity of itself. 30% will go into acute leukemia. 70% will not, but they may die of their cytopenia. Okay. Going to skip forward. These are the ones we want to talk about. Refractory anemia through sideroblasts, refractory anemia with excess blasts, chronic myelomonocytic leukemia, and refractory anemia with excess blasts in transformation. I'm going to skip over the WHO classification because that's not what you're going to be tested on. So in the peripheral blood of refractory anemia, you'll have less than 1% blasts, dimorphic red blood cell population, and the white cells and platelets are normal. In the bone marrow, this is showing you the dimorphic picture here, small hypochromic versus normochromic. And then the bone marrow. You have less than 5% blasts. We say that so that you know the blast count's normal. Less than 15% sideroblasts. Dyserythropoiesis, some abnormal erythroid production, and you have erythroid hyperplasia, okay? Granulocytic and megakaryocytic cell lines are normal. So, peripheral blood, dimorphic, bone marrow less than 15%. That's important. This is your erythroid hyperplasia here. This is mitosis. Okay. Let's kind of skip that. Skip the cytopenias. Refractory anemia with ring sideroblasts. The very same thing here in the peripheral blood, except Pappenheimer bodies could be found, okay? So it looks just like refractory anemia, except you can have some Pappenheimer bodies.
Question?
Yes.
Are we held accountable for everything we skip over?
No.
None of it?
So now you have ring sideroblasts that are greater than 15% in the peripheral blood. So in refractory anemia with ring sideroblasts in the bone marrow, you have the dyserythropoiesis, still normal blasts, but greater than 15% ring sideroblasts. That's important.
You said in the peripheral blood?
The bone marrow.
Okay.
Bone marrow, sorry. That's what I said. That's not correct. You do not ever get your ring sideroblasts in the peripheral blood. Okay, and here's your erythroid hyperplasia. Okay. Okay, what you do need to know is you do better with RARS than you do any of the disorders I'm talking about here. So this one's the best. Refractory anemia is next to the best. That's important. Okay. So refractory anemia with excess blasts. This is third to the best. Less than 5% blasts in the peripheral blood. Now we're in the peripheral blood. We said less than 1% before. Now we're saying less than 5%. So you could see some blasts in the peripheral blood. Now you're having granulocytic dysgranulopoiesis, so abnormalities in the platelet and in the white cells. So we still have all the changes here that you can have in refractory anemia, except now we have excess blasts. So we probably don't have an erythroid hyperplasia, but we can have the ring sideroblasts. We can have the dimorphic blood picture, but that doesn't matter because now we've got blasts, okay? That's the most important characteristic. And where we can have some abnormalities in the platelets, too. There can be giant platelets. You can have a depressed platelet count and a depressed white count. And now you see degranulated cells. Whenever you see degranulated cells, that should be a trigger that you've got a problem here, okay? The diagnostic feature here is right here. In the bone marrow, you have 5 to 20% blasts. So in refractory anemia, you had to have less than 15% ring sideroblasts. Refractory anemia with ring sideroblasts, greater than 15% ring sideroblasts. RAEB, 5 to 20% blasts. Okay, that's important. Those are your defining characteristics. All of these, the myelodysplastics, have dysplasia. That's the name of them. Okay, so you see, as you guys counted yesterday, did you ever see two blasts in the very same field? You could hardly find a blast in the 500 count. So This would be excess blasts. And you can see you've got lots more white cells than you have red cell abnormalities there. Again, you can have ring sideroblasts. Okay, RAEB, you do not want to have this one. Third best, okay? CMML, this is the only one that the diagnostic criteria is in the peripheral blood. It has the same amount of blasts in the peripheral blood as RAEB, but the monocytosis in the peripheral blood of greater than 1,000 absolute count. So you've got to do your math. Greater than 1,000 absolute count. And disgranulopoiesis is possible. So you have a monocytosis out here. So you do your percentage and times by your white count. And the bone marrow can look two different ways. It can be show with monocytosis here. You see the monocytic series right through here. Or it can look like an RAEB. Okay, with too many myeloblasts. Okay, so it has two looks to it. And we'll try to make sure that we just show you the excess monos if we ever show you a bone marrow of it. Okay, RAEBIT, just real quick. Greater than 5%, less than 30%. I'd like you to change that to less than 20%. Everybody wake up. Hey, wake. Wake up. No, I'm talking to her. Okay. I need you to wake up and write this down. Okay, this is not correct in your stuff. I need you to put 20% on that one. Okay. So granulopoiesis may have hour rods in the blasts of RAEBIT. You'd have the same degranulation, but this is a diagnostic feature. 20. Let's see. We're going to have to do this. In the FAB classification, they use 30% as the acute leukemias. That's why RAEBIT is still here. Okay? So 21 to 30% makes it RAEBIT. Because we're going to continue to teach you this way, when I'm going to tell you that every place you go, they're going to say at 20% it's acute leukemia. But in order to get through the myelodysplastics, we're going to leave this one in there. Basically, it's been thrown out and called an acute leukemia, okay, because it's got 20% blasts. But the testing is still behind schedule, meaning that the test questions haven't changed. So this is probably what you guys will be tested on. Because the new World Health Organization classification hasn't gotten into the testing phase of ASCP or NCA, okay? The other thing is they've just combined forces and they're busily writing the test. And as Christine checked, they're just barely getting it in the phase of it. So I'll try to make that a little clearer. But this is classification that used to exist before World Health Organization took over. This you'll still probably be tested on, but out in the real world, none of us out there, I don't think, are using 30% anymore. We're using 20% as an acute leukemia, okay? And these guys did the worst. So RARS, the best. RA, second best. RAEB, third best. CMML, fourth best. And this is the worst, okay? You'll need to know that. Okay, let's call it good.
Killing all these people is they don't have the cell
signature. That's right.
So
exactly.
Can't we just transfuse them the cell signature?
You know you can transfuse.
But
you can't survive on that.
Why not?
Cells don't last that long after.